Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm so excited to see everyone here. Is my voice making it all the way to the back? All right. Well, my name is Georgia, and I am an alcoholic. Hello, and I am so grateful to be here, and I've waited 2 years for this moment to arrive. And I'm so grateful for it. And I just thank the committee. I thank Julie for hanging in there, for leading us to today, and everyone that helped, and those that are going to be here for the entirety of the roundup. And I'm excited about it. And I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience, strength, and hope. And I'm really excited to have family and friends from far away. Yes, present. And it's really special to have you guys here because you know my story. So if you hear somebody, straighten out their throat, then that means I might be, might not be telling the whole story. So I'll just ask for forgiveness now. some things are not to be said at the podium. But I'm sober. My sobriety date is August 18th, 2003. And, I vacillated over that date, and I talked to my current sponsor, Ms. Julie, and about my date, because I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous when I came here. And people were talking about sobriety dates and my date and this date. I'm like, I don't have a date. They said, well, you need to get a date. I said, well, how do you get a date? And she said, last time you had something to drink. I said, oh, it was August 18th. I went to a concert and I had champagne. And she said, okay, that's your sobriety date. Well, I celebrated 1 year of sobriety, and I was getting ready to celebrate my second year of sobriety that night at the Friday night meeting in Upland. That was one of my regular meetings. And I told my sponsor that story that my best girlfriend told me that, no, that's not your sobriety date because you had something to drink on that date. I said, oh, yeah, we went to that concert. Oh, yeah. So I told my sponsor before the meeting. She says, well, you get to give back all them cards and presents and let them know that you're celebrating 1 year all over again. I'm like, oh, wow, from the podium. And at that meeting, it's like 100, 200 people to show up to that meeting. I said, I don't care what you say. I'm still going to be sober. I'm going to tell them anyway. So what? I just had a matter-of-fact attitude. I said, you can't make me not be sober. And you're still going to be my sponsor. And so I told them. And everybody was like, okay, and clapped and looked kind of weird, and it was over. So I'm still sober. So my current sponsor said, you can pick your date. You can change that date. I said, okay. So I tried to change it to August 19th, but I was compelled just to keep 18 and just roll with it. And it's my story, so I get to tell it. My experience, I'll talk about a little bit about my drunkalog, how I used to drink and carry on, just to identify with anyone else out there had that incomprehensible demoralization in your story. Anyone went out to have a cocktail, excuse me, not a drink, but a cocktail or two, and winded up closing the place down, more than once. Or I'm going to happy hour with, people from work, we're going to do happy hour, and I'm going to leave as soon as happy hour's over. When they put up the food, I'm out. And find yourself at the next bar, restaurant, drink until they close the place down. That's how I started out drinking. And it was okay for a while. And I kept drinking, thinking that it was okay because everybody else was doing it, so why can't I do it? And then I start compromising my drinking. And my whole drinking career is about a compromise. And it started with my very first exposure to alcohol, which was, I had a boyfriend. Some people may know him. I won't say his name from the podium. He's not here to represent. But he was a close family friend. Both of our families were really close. And so he said, well, let's go out. I said, my mom and dad ain't gonna let me go out that front door after 9 o'clock. That ain't gonna happen. So I said, okay, I'll climb out the window. So we rolled the window. I rolled the window out because it was one of them rolling windows. He took the screen off. I jumped out, and we went on and had some cocktails. It wasn't a cocktail. I thought it was a nice bottle of wine. But it was, I learned to find out afterwards, it was Mad Dog 2020. And I'm thinking, this is top shelf. I don't know nothing about alcohol, nothing, you know, nothing. Because, you know, alcohol really wasn't in our home and we didn't see it. We didn't, you know, have anything to do with it. So I'm thinking like, oh my God, I got so sick. So he poured me back into that window where I was so drunk. And I managed to roll it back. He put the screen in. I rolled the window back in and my sister was over there asleep. So I got in the bed and it was spinning. I went straight to the restroom and I just like got sick as a dog. Oh, I was so sick. I stayed there all night. And then here comes my mom. It's time to be ready to go to church. I said, oh, I'm sick. I think I've been, you know, that way. It's time, that time of the month. She said, I don't care what it is. You're getting up and you're going to church. I'm like, oh, Lord. I was so sick. I managed to make it there. And I went outside to the back of the church and stayed there eating grapes off the grapevine. I didn't know what to do. But my compromise was I will never drink Mad Dog 2020 again in my life. And I have not had that in my mouth ever again. Because later on in life, I think when I got to AA, I found out that was like bottom of the shelf. Alcohol. Well, I'm like, what? What? He gave me that? I'm like, man. But, you know, it was always about a compromise. And, you know, I look back over the years. And one time I was just looking over my yearbook. And I can bring my yearbook and read it. And that's my drunk log. Everyone was talking about, oh, I hope you'll be okay. I hope you stop drinking. I said, did I drink that much? I think what I did, it was always an episode. It was always, I fell off my box. I was a cheerleader, and we had these big boxes like this to cheer on, and I fell off on the ground. It was so embarrassing. I just got back up, dusted myself off, and got back on the box and kept on cheering. It was, I didn't care. I just fell, just get up and keep going. So that's partly how I started, and it just became like a thing to do. Most of my friends are older than I am, so they could drink, so I figured I could too, and so I did, until, you know, it got to the place where it was a problem. Then I had to compromise. I can only drink on Friday happy hour. I did that for a lot of years. I could not drink and go to church. If I had something to drink, I was not walking to that church. Forget about it. I'm not showing up. I'm not doing it. Because my dad was the pastor. So that wouldn't look good. That would not look well. But it went over well. And, you know, then compromise was, you know, I have kids. I can't drink while I'm nursing. I can't drink, you know, until the kids go to bed. And, you know, it was just, it became really challenging just to have a drink. So I found Mardi Gras. When I found Mardi Gras, it was on. It was just on. Every year I'm at Mardi Gras. When I first Mardi Gras, they said, you can drink and drive, just don't be drunk. I'm like, oh, I'm loving this place. loving it. And, you know, I never got a DUI or ticket in New Orleans driving under the influence. And so it became a ritual for mine. That was my spot. I can manage staying sober until Mardi Gras, and it was just on. And I compromised up to the point to where, you know, I went to school, graduated, and I got this degree. And I couldn't find nobody to go out with me. Nobody wanted to party. I'm like, what? Yeah, nobody wants to celebrate? Okay, I'll celebrate by myself. So I celebrated by myself, and I was ready to go home. And I drove home, and I used to party about 15 minutes from my house. So I always had to drive a long way to get back home. So I'm driving home, and I decided I wanted to turn around. I don't want to go on this freeway. I want to go on the other freeway. Well, I was on the on-ramp transitioning to another freeway high up in the sky. I said, nope, I'm turning around. I turned around in the sky. Car flipped over, turned over, and landed on all four tires. And not a tire burst. And I got out and looked, I'm like, oh my God, how did I do that? Man come running off the on-ramp. Lady, you okay? You okay? I said, yeah, I'm fine. And I called my ex-husband. I said, I just rolled my car off the freeway and I don't know where I'm at. He said, how can I find you? I said, I don't know, because I don't know where I'm at. He said, well, go to the call box. I said, okay. So I walked to the call box, And I called, and I, somebody answered. I says, you know, my car, I rolled my car off the freeway and I need help. I said, okay, stay right there. I'm like, okay. So CHP shows up. I said, hey, how did you know I'm here? He said, well, you called us. I said, I did? How did I call? He said, you can use the call box. I said, oh, it goes to you? I said, oh. I said, oh, my God. He said, yeah, you've been drinking. I said, yeah, I have. And so they took me to jail. And I have loving parents. They came and got me the next day. It was so sweet and kind. They didn't chastise me or anything. They just took me home. I'm like, okay, I got to do better, you know. And you know, but that wasn't enough. That experience wasn't enough to tell me that I should stop drinking. No. I just kept on going, and over the years, you know, I got that DUI. And my higher power is so cunning, baffling, and powerful is my higher power. I stayed sober from that first DUI 9 years, 11 months, and 3 weeks until I got the second DUI. I'm like, oh, my. I was kind of like happy. I said, oh, this is going to be one again. But it wasn't one again. It was two. And I'm like, oh. When I found that out, I told that attorney, I said, whatever you do, I do not go to jail. I am not going to jail. I don't care how much it costs, I'm not going to jail. I said, I got kids. I can't do that. And so I did go to jail. I had to do community service, clean up on the freeway. And I was so happy. I would sing, tell jokes, laugh, wave at people on the freeway. They said, what are you doing? I said, I'm so happy. Because the alternative was far worse. That means I had to check in and go to jail on the weekend and check out. I'm like, I can't do that. I cannot do that. I would lose my mind if I had to do that. And so, you know, I made it through all that, and I cleared all the requirements for my 18 months and got my DUI cleared and everything, and I was happy for it. And, you know, but I wasn't finished. That wasn't enough. Girlfriend of mine's getting married. She's going to get married in Vegas. And I'm like, okay, I got me a driver to drive me to Vegas because I know I'm not supposed to drive. But I didn't know my driver didn't know how to drive. He drove the car in second gear from Fontana, almost to Baker. I'm like, oh, gosh. He's tearing up the car, so we had to get towed into Las Vegas. It was crazy. And I was upset and all that, and I decided to not go to that room that I paid for. I was just going to sit at the bar and wait till morning and go home. Well, what happens when you sit at the bar? You're going to drink, right? I'm an alcoholic. So I was drinking. I went back to the room that morning, and he says, well, I'm taking the bus home. I said, you're taking the bus home? He said, yeah. I was like, okay. I drove back drunk. I was lit. I called my girlfriend. I said, look, you're going to talk to me until I get in my driveway, because if the police pull me over, I don't know what I'm going to do. You might have to talk me off the ledge. I made it back home. And I made it in my driveway. I said, thank you, I got to go, and hung up. And I told that story to my 18-month group I had to go to. I told it to her, the leader, or a teacher, if you want to call it, and she asked me, Georgia, do you want to be sober? I don't know why I said yes, but I said yes. It just came out of my mouth. Nothing passed through my head. Nothing passed through my heart. There was no compromise. I just said yes. And she said, find a women's meeting and stay there. I said, yes, ma'am. And I found a women's meeting. Like I said, my higher power loves me. He loves me. That meeting was right across the street from my parents' house in Upland. I'm like, oh, I couldn't ask for a better scenario. I wasn't supposed to be driving, so I could walk. And the reason I'm sober today is I took my daughter to that meeting. And we went early, and the little lady in that meeting became my sponsor for 16 years. And she said, well, no kids are allowed. This is a closed meeting. I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't even know what a closed meeting means. I don't know what that means. I said, okay. But something in me told me, Georgia, don't leave. Don't leave. My baby had to walk across two lanes on this side, a medium, a Madonna Trail, and two more lanes on the other side, and walk down the road to my parents' house. She was about 6 or 7. She's a little tight. She's still a little tight. She did that. And I waved by, and I went in that meeting, and I stayed in that meeting all my days. I went to that Wednesday night meeting, and I stayed sober. I just knew that I couldn't leave. And anybody knows me, you say something about my babies, you know how, like, you know, your feathers fly up and wings get to flapping, and, you know, you're talking about my baby, and then my baby can't come here, and then if she can't come, I can't come. That never entered my mind. Only thing that entered my mind was, I gotta stay. I have to stay. And I stayed, and it fared me well, because I'm sober today behind it. And, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, the drunk-a-log, and, you know, I had some drunken days. God has something for me. I was out drinking with some friends, and this lady said, I need a ride home. I said, I'll give you a ride home. I'm just as drunk as she drunk. I drove her home in Long Beach. I drove her home, and on the way back, I got so sleepy. I could not go over the bridge. So I pulled over, and I think it was like an abandoned railroad track. I went to sleep. I mean, straight up sleep. And I woke up around 6 o'clock. I said, oh, I got to get home, get dressed for work. And I did. And a few weeks later, I was going down that same road, and here comes the train. I'm like, oh, that could have been me. That's a live track. I thought it was a dead track. I could have been dead a long time ago. But God had spared me to do something and to be something and with my life. And so for that, I'm eternally grateful that I found AA, because I could have been dead. I could have been dead driving off the freeway, but it didn't happen. That was not my time. It was not my time. You know, if I had a lot of circumstances come up, and, you know, alcohol was not my go-to. It was not my go-to. I was like about seven years sober, and maybe 7 or 9 years sober. I can't remember when, but my son passed away. I was in a Friday night meeting. My oldest sister called me. And first of all, I never take my phone inside the meeting. But this night, I had my phone on me in the meeting. And I heard it buzz, and said, oh, June, my sister. Oh, why is she calling me? It's nighttime. And she don't call. Very rarely call, especially at night. So I said, well, let me answer it. She said, well, where's Joshua? I said, what do you mean, where's Joshua? Why are you asking me where Joshua? He's grown. I don't keep up with him like that. She said, no, seriously. I said, I don't know. I said, I don't know. I said, well, something happened. I said, well, you find him, then you call me back. I was not leaving my Friday night meeting. You know, AA became, like, really serious for me. And she called me back. She said, well, he's in the hospital. I said, all right, I'll leave. And I told my sponsor, I said, I got to go. My son's in the hospital. Driving on the freeway, I received the calling that he was gone home. He wasn't going to be there. His body and spirit was not going to be there. His body there, but not his spirit. And, you know, I kind of weaved a little bit and started crying a little bit. And I said, get it together, Jordan, get it together. You can't lose it. You got to get there. So I drove there and got in the room. My mom and my dad was in the room, and they told me what happened. And I hit the floor, and I was like, oh, I'm in a hospital. This floor is dirty. I got to get up now. So I got myself up. I'm like, oh, my God, what am I going to do? And, you know, God walked me through that with grace, with grace. And I didn't cry. It took me 7 years to cry for that loss. I had a big knot, a huge knot in the back of my neck. I mean, it was like a gorge. And I knew what it was. It was stress that I was holding on to. It took me 7 years to release it, and I got a chance to release it, and I felt better for it. And I didn't have to drink behind it. AA was right there. My AA brothers and sisters showed up like you wouldn't believe. They were there, came and helped me, and just in the house, cleaning up, cooking, and said, I'm just going to pack and move, and they came and packed all my stuff. You know, it was amazing. And, you know, when the hand of AA needs to be there, I want to be part of the group. That's what I learned in AA. You know, somebody needs a ride, I'll give you a ride, sober. I won't be pulling off on the railroad tracks. whatever I can do to support, I'm there. You know, I've moved to Florida, and I got active really fast. I found me a woman's meeting that became my home group, and there that you have to be on the roll. You know, you got to sign up to be in the group or something. They want you to have a stable group. So, okay, this is my stable group, but I go to other groups. I got 3 sponsees. You know, I've only been there a few months. I got 3 sponsees. I'm active, a lot of meetings, and, you know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, what you guys taught me to do. You know, show up, suit up and show up. I've been doing that. And my friends and from Bishop, they know. I was new to Bishop. I found me a meeting, and I stayed at that meeting. That meeting was 6 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning. It was early. And I lived out towards, I was way out there. So it took me like 25, 30 minutes to get back into Bishop. And I would drive kind of quickly to get there, to be there on time, and then leave there and go to work. Because I just had to be in the meeting, you know? And I started a meeting on a reservation because they didn't have a meeting there, and I worked on a Native American reservation when I was in Bishop. And try to, you know, get meetings started there. You know, maybe I was the only one at the meeting, but I still stayed there because you never know who's going to walk in that door. You never know. And they knew I was there, and if they had problems or something, they would come and talk to me, and I'd talk to them. And, you know, AA has always been a go-to for me. And I figured if I can go to a club or to a bar, I can find an AA meeting anywhere, anytime, day or night. Now we got the Zoom calls. You can Zoom 24 hours, seriously, and be in a meeting. If I didn't qualify enough as an alcoholic, just know that first drink, that phenomenon of craving, I'm glad I learned that from the doctor's opinion. I didn't understand how it got triggered, but I did have the phenomenon of craving. I still have it. But I don't activate it. You know, I'd be wondering about the communion. Some churches have real wine. I'm like, ooh, I can't drink that. I don't want to say that, no phenomenon of craving. It did set into me. I think it's still in me. I figure if I have another drink, that phenomenon of craving would kick in. And I don't know, one may not be enough, and 100 may be too many. You know, and I probably would get behind the wheel again and drive in that condition. But I don't want to do that anymore. You know, I have a better life now. You guys afforded me a better life. And I want to show my appreciation by being responsible. And I don't know if you guys see it here, but I'm trying to learn it. They say it often in Florida. It's called I'm Responsible. It says, when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to always be there. And for that, I am responsible. If somebody show up and need somebody to talk to, need a phone call, you know, need a ride, need water, coffee, doesn't matter. Nobody's showing up at the meeting, I'll show up. I'll be there. We can have a meeting. 2 people is a meeting, you know. I've been on a cruise, and my sponsor told me to look for Friends of Bill. And I found Friends of Bill, and I go to that library every day I was on that cruise ship. At 7 a.m. in the morning. One time one person showed up, the rest of the days no one showed. And she always told me, I said, if you read chapter 5, that's the meeting. So I would sit there and read chapter 5. I said, okay, I had a meeting. And, you know, and I just leave. But it kept me sober. It kept me sober because there's a lot of drinking on them cruise ships. Whew, a lot. I've been on them too. But I'm on the other side. I don't have to do that. I don't enjoy myself that way anymore. So if you have any questions for me, I my talk is done. Thank you for letting me share.
Step down.